For December the 17th, 2021, we talk about Halo Infinite, Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, and we ask you which games most and least respect your time. Welcome to Level 397. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Here we are, rocking it three style tonight. I always want to say when we do a three style that it'll probably be a quick one, but I've been disproven in the past.
Filthy lies.
I think Mikol Jala is the speedrun podcast.
Yes.
So
yeah,
it'll be a medium length is my prediction.
It's the podcast
you most medium expect.
When I think of this podcast, I think of medium.
So. Yeah, so I'm going to put us at about between an hour 30 and an hour 45. Let's say that's my prediction.
Now I'm motivated to just mess with you.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
In which direction?
If I told you, it wouldn't be messing with you.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
Huh? Played shit. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out what to do here. Hey, if you're listening to this, watch Duck Stream. As you're hearing this, it'll be tonight. The West Coast folks are going to be starting at 9 p.m. Eastern on December the 17th. Then we're going for 48 hours after that through to Sunday night at 9 p.m., finishing it up there, streaming games to support the Transactive Gender Project. I'm going to be playing Until Dawn. In addition to a bunch of, you know,
it's
been forever since I played that. And it may or may not be coming up on WoW this next year, but that's a game that you need to play a bunch of times. And it is real fun to play with an audience, I found last time. So Until Dawn rules, I'll be doing that. I think some more Among Us would be fun because that was fun last time. Plenty of Jackbox, all of that. I don't know what the West Coast folks are planning. Honestly,
mystery box,
shenanigans, definitely shenanigans.
Yeah, well, they're all going to be at Nick's house is the thing, and it's the overnight shift because they like that late night loopy stuff. So
the loopy boys,
yeah. Whereas I am fine doing a 12-hour shift from 9 a to 9 p. I can do that with my hands tied behind my back. I won't, but could.
Are you the singer or challenge me
with a banana controller and your hands tied behind your back?
Yeah. It's that straight 24-hour that really screwed me up. So. duckfeed.tv/duckstream, all the same stuff. We have shirts for sale. I did a new design and I tried something new. I put up so they're polygonal ducks, like they're designed to be kind of polygon, digital PS1 kind of style, but instead of just having the one design, I put up one, I think there's six designs, each with a color that is on the trans and non-binary flag. So there's pink, blue, I've got purple, yellow, white, and black. So, I think I went a little bit overboard, but I was like, hey, let's give this a shot and see. So, and also, you know, people have different favorite colors too. So
it looks awesome.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I always try and pick a different color for the shirt when I buy it every year. Mm-hmm. And it is now making up a significant percentage of my wardrobe.
That is cool. Yeah. And everybody who buys, like, all of the proceeds that would come from that go on to the total.
To Cole.
At the
pocket.
No, God, no. No, it goes on to the total at the end for Transactive. And, I mean, that'll take up my, like, me talking about what I've been doing, because it's just been, A, cramming to get work done so I can have a little bit of time off around Christmas, and also getting ready for Duckstream. So it's always a big, like, all the stuff lining up. Yeah.
So for the people who listen to this after it is done, is there a video on demand for it or something?
Yeah, there'll be video on demand on Twitch for a while. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yep. Yeah. Ben, how about you? What's going on?
I mean, I got anxiety now since you mentioned Among Us possibly being played this week. I'm out of practice and the bar is high.
He's already sharking us. Do you hear this?
Yeah. Oh man, that's
weak. I'm weak, guys.
I don't know. I guess I played a little bit of pool when I was little, but yeah.
I bit my sus last week, so let's see what I got.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much. I'll be traveling back home to Cincinnati, so I'll actually be on the East Coast for Duckstream, so that'll be cool.
Cool.
And I also decided to take next week off of work, so I'm excited about that as well.
Oh, sweet.
I'm going to hang out. I'm going to go down to visit my brother and stay with him for a good amount of time over for Christmas and stuff, and we're going to spend Christmas there, I think. But what I'm really excited about is I'm going to go see Spider-Man with my nephew, who has never been to a movie theater before.
Ooh.
So this will be his first time.
Nice.
And he sounds excited about it. So we'll see the difference in excitement when Tobey Maguire comes on screen between me and him.
So. Who's that old man?
How old is your nephew now?
He's 5. I want to say 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a guess. That's a shot in the dark. I might be wrong. Could be 4.
You could round up to PG-13. Let's go.
Yeah.
it's Spider-Man. It's fine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Probably.
who knows?
That's we'll just find out.
I can't wait to hear reports on this traumatized 5-year-old.
Yeah.
No, it's
fine. Hates the color green from the movie onward.
My first movie was the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when I was like 2 years old or something like that. And I mean, I don't know if you've seen that movie, but like, it's actually pretty violent and messed up compared to what you would think. So, you know. Also, I was 2, so I did not perceive or understand or remember anything. Yeah.
Yeah. My earliest movie memory is watching Aladdin in theaters.
Yeah.
I think it was like a second run theater because I think it was past the time that Aladdin was out. Maybe that was on point. I don't know. I just remember ducking behind the seats for the big fight scene at the end because it got a little intense there.
Yeah. I remember trying to play it off legit, like we left into the lobby after seeing Aladdin, and like I liked the movie, it was good, but I had to be like, oh, it was good, you know, even with all the mushy stuff, you know, that like that little boy, like I need to make sure nobody thinks I like the cootie stuff.
I'm not sure what it says about my parents, but I saw Robin Hood, like the R-rated version, when I was like 3 or 4. Nice. And that messed me up for a little bit.
I mean, Alan Rickman. We got to learn about Alan Rickman sooner or later, you know? Nice. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. It's lame to talk about the weather, but I was hanging outside today in a t-shirt, and that is messed up. So
pretty messed up, yeah.
On some levels, hey, got some yard work done. That was sweet. Got to take a nice walk. I'm glad I'm not cooped up inside. And on the other hand, it's December, so what the
fuck? Little weird. Not to make it all serious, but you're closer to Kentucky than I am. Did you guys get any of the like bad storms and stuff? Obviously not the apocalyptic stuff.
Yeah, rain and wind, but we did not get anything that would have indicated like there were tornadoes nearby.
Right, right. Huh.
But yeah, it's... I know someone who works at the facility, the Amazon facility that got blown through, and they're fine, but
that's good.
Obviously lots of people were not.
Right.
So also weather stuff not being so great, but yeah, it's, my week has been spending a surprising amount of time outdoors.
Nice.
Just because it has been so warm.
Nice. What yard work do you have to do in December?
Oh man. So we have a pin oak in our front yard that is a real piece of work. And out of spite hangs on to its leaves until like December, January.
Ugh.
And then it will drop them all at once. So you gotta do the yard work for the other trees and do all the leaf raking and mowing and all that stuff. And then this one's like, now it's my turn.
Yeah, I'm going to drop these leaves just in time for 6 inches of snow to be dropped on it to not.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
There are years where that's absolutely happened, and then you wind up raking leaves in the spring.
Right.
And it's all like, it's March, and I'm raking. This is messed up.
It's all matted down, yeah.
Yeah, so that was our tree that is obstinate doing its thing.
Yeah. Could you poison the tree just a little?
I could try. I don't know if that would get the leaves to fall off earlier or later is the thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends. Is there a mischievous dryad anywhere nearby?
Yeah. That might be what it is. That's maybe. I'll do a ritual to get the leaves to drop at a normal time. Mm-hmm. It's a hipster tree. It can't be like everyone else.
No. Mm-hmm. It's gotta stick around long after it's worn out its welcome. Yeah. Huh. That's cool. Yeah. I think that we should do the rest of the show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And we can get started with
The grind,
where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past period of time or so. Who's played something new?
I have.
Ben, you go.
Okay, but I'll talk about the things that aren't new first.
Okay,
bait and switch. So I'll just get them out of the way. Gloomhaven, continue to play that with two of my groups. It's still fun. I'm trying the strategy in two different campaigns for getting the evil character. It seems to be working in both campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
Had a moment of greed in one of my games where I tried to farm one more XP and it costed us the mission.
Oh no!
They didn't see me reject the one card to try and draw the other card, so it burned one. But if I would have kept one, I would have had two bottom attacks, so I would have probably killed a person. Whereas I didn't.
Okay.
The path that I chose. So that was sad times, but I'm pretty sure they don't listen to this podcast, so I think my secret is safe.
Okay, you didn't own up to it right away.
I kept that to myself, yes. It was quite unfortunate. I mean, the odds were on my side, all right?
Okay.
I drew the null card from my deck, and that's like a 1 in 20, so.
I trust your strategy.
Bringing it up on this podcast is the behavior of someone who's at peace with their actions, totally. Yeah.
This is kind of like my confessional, so you guys are the game priests here.
Actually, I'm going to add some people to the call.
Or wait, now it's like Maury's show. It's not like a confessional at all.
Nightmare mode. You just hear the Discord.
But yeah, those are still fun. I'm still enjoying that. It's like playing multiplayer XCOM. So it's a pretty enjoyable experience that hasn't really worn too thin yet.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's another group that I want to start another campaign with on that. So I'm hoping my interest like lasts and sustains with that as well. I don't like wane off of it. All right. Other than that, keep playing Storybook Brawl. Keeps being fun. I think there's going to be a patch coming out this week. I don't know if I'll play it or not before leaving on vacation. So I'll probably talk about that in another 2 or 3 weeks, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The new game that I want to talk about is over the weekend. I haven't played a lot overall, but I went and visited some friends over the weekend, and they had just picked up Halo Infinite.
Ah, shit.
And so we played some of that together for like maybe 6 or 8 hours.
So local multiplayer, or?
We did the campaign and just kind of traded off and like watched one another play it.
Because they don't have co-op campaign yet.
I did not see that, so I agree with that.
Yeah. This works out because I downloaded Halo Infinite.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't play it.
I don't honestly know that much story-wise, so I won't say anything about that to not spoil anything. But I do want to talk about the format of the game, because I thought that was the most interesting change.
It's an open world, right?
Yeah, it's an open world Halo game. And apparently, and this was a very weird experience, because the two friends I was visiting, one of them works at Microsoft on the Xbox team. The other one works at 343 Studios as a programmer. On Halo. So it was interesting, you know, like getting like tidbits of like one of them was saying like they had planned this for a game like a while ago, or they were thinking of like, I don't even know what number Halo we were on, because I checked out at like 3, but like I think it was like 1 or 2 games ago they thought about doing this, but then they kind of like backed off of it. It seemed like too strange of an idea. But yeah, it's an open world game. So like it didn't really hit me. Like, you're doing like a regular corridor shooter, shooting aliens, beating them up or whatever. And then at one point it opens up a map and shows like, oh, it's like almost like a Far Cry map, but it looks nicer. It's like, you know, geographic and maybe like Doom, you know, where there's like good dimensionality to it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a bunch of objectives there. And it's like, oh shit, this is an open world game. Yeah. And you just kind of explore at your leisure, like what you want to do. You know, it's like there's boss battles, there's freeing Marines, things like that. The inside info I got is that the most effective way, and like you can upgrade things. So like, you know, they have like different bases that are like checkpoints that you can unlock. And then if you do that, you can spawn vehicles there. Mm-hmm. But like everything's upgradable and you can get weapons there, and all of that's like upgradable too. So at the start you can get a like mongoose or whatever, but eventually, like as you do more and more of the map and more XP, I guess, you eventually can get like a warthog or a variant on that and maybe something bigger, and I don't know where it ends. And same thing with the weapons is like you start off and you can get like maybe a pistol or something like that. But as you like defeat bosses or something like that, you might unlock new weapons on the map that you can get at these bases. Hmm. Apparently, the end goal is you can get a car of like six people that all have rocket launchers and just drive them around in a warthog and have them like drive by everybody with rocket launchers. So that seems like a fun endpoint. Yeah, so definitely was kind of thrown for a loop about that. The characters kind of seem similar to how they normally are, where it's like a lot of intercom like dialogues. They introduce like one character from the get-go. I think they show this like in a trailer or something, like somebody who finds you in space. I didn't even see the beginning like hour or two of the game, so I kind of got jumped in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. But they're, you know, periodically talking to you on comms, similar to how the one sergeant, I forget his last name from the previous games, was.
Everything except the broadest story beats of Halo 1 through 3 have really just kind of washed off of me.
Yeah.
Which
is maybe telling, but that formula seems like it hasn't really changed too much. Like all that's kind of there narratively. But yeah, so it's like playing Halo mixed with like Far Cry. It's a weird experience. Mm-hmm. but that's kind of the read on it I had with the few hours I spent playing it.
Yeah, so you get around on vehicles and stuff like that. Like, how big is the world compared to you?
I guess it's hard to say because I'm not sure how much we unlock. I guess artistically, one of the cool things about the Halo is like, it's like fragmented, so it's like exploded maybe or something, so there's like sections of the ring that you're on.
Okay.
But that's basically how they do boundaries, right? It's mm-hmm. like, okay, it's split in all these different pieces, so I'm on this, you know, chunk, and I'm going to be stuck on this chunk until I do enough things, and then I can hop over to this other chunk. But artistically, it looks really cool because, like, if you look across the ring, like, it's, you know, you can see pieces of it. And then periodically, like, you look on at the floor and you see space where there's, like, a hole in the ring or whatever. And it's a weird experience to look down and see space that I'm not used to. How big it is... I mean, the initial area that we were in, it's tough to say. Like, maybe, do you remember, like, I don't even remember which Halo. I think it was, like, the first Halo. Like, maybe one of the first Halos, like, bigger levels. I'm just thinking of the green plains or whatever that you, like, fight people in before you go underground. And mm-hmm. it's a dark room or whatever. Yeah. Like, if you think of the entire map of that, maybe it's about that size. Or maybe that to 2x that, I guess, for the initial area.
Okay.
So... It's probably like comparable to their previous games where you explore something of that size for a bit and then you jump to another chunk instead of jumping to another level.
How about the kind of the weapon system? Is it classic Halo? You pick up, you know, and hold two weapons that you're just kind of switching back and forth, and like your weapon upgrades carry no matter which instance of that weapon you're holding.
So I actually didn't see any dual wielding. I think it might all be like single wielding. Maybe it's different on multiplayer, or maybe that I just didn't engage with it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, they have some new guns, but they do a good job of, like, each gun kind of has its own focus and kind of its own purpose. They have a lot of the old staples, so they have, like, pistol, battle rifle, assault rifle, sniper rifle, and they have, like, alien equivalents of these. Mm-hmm. The ones that are a little bit different, and I think they have shotguns still, but I might not have seen it. But they have, like, some weird guns where it's, like, close to a shotgun, and then something that's close to a grenade launcher, but it, like, shoots it in a weird arc. But all the gun has its, like, very specific focus where it's like, oh, I should use that in this situation.
Yeah.
But
you can only carry two of them at a time, right? And you switch back and forth. It's not like Doom where you have all of them. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. And they all have, like, limited ammo. Which I was disappointed by. The sword eventually runs out of power.
Oh, so weird.
I think that's a change. I don't know when they introduced that, but I definitely don't think that was in 2 or 3. But but like all of that feels similar. So like it doesn't feel like, you know, anything's noticeably different there with the weapon mechanics and the shooting mechanics. Mm-hmm. But it's not like decreased or anything like that. Yeah. I guess. And then this is a big change, actually. Master Chief has a grappling hook now.
Oh.
So it's like...
it's legally required in any game now.
Yeah, so it's like halfway to being Just Cause. So I'm waiting for them to have a period as well. But that's a very interesting mechanic, and that kind of changes like how you traverse the environment. So you can just shoot it towards the ground in front of you if you're trying to move faster to gain speed if you're walking. But you can traverse like really high up too and do some kind of broken seeming things with it. So now Halo, now with grappling hooks.
Cool.
But the one thing I didn't notice is, and I don't know if this, they have this beyond like 3, is they don't like have all the little power ups that they used to have where it's like drop like an air vent that you can jump on or drop like a whatever. Do you remember those things that they had? Drop like the bubble or whatever.
I didn't
see that anywhere in the game, like in the early stages. They might introduce it later, but
or it might be something there. That you unlock, like a perk for doing a particular mission. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, and apparently you can get this on PC, like anywhere, like not just
It's so, it's on Game Pass.
Oh. And so the thing that's interesting is Halo Infinite is free. The campaign is considered DLC that costs $60. So that's just like an interesting business model, I guess.
That's strange. And also just with the, like what Dennis was saying earlier, like, oh yeah, it like co-op campaign that has a like a later release date. This and like the multiplayer was out earlier. Like that's very strange to me.
Yeah.
I think it's the nature of multiplayer now is like the business model for it is have a large install base.
Yeah.
And so we can't, you know, you can't put it behind a paywall because you need a shit ton of people playing it. And so like that like, operates by a different set of economics than any campaign driven game. They're effectively splitting the two.
Yeah.
And yeah, call it what you want. Call it, you know, the DLC or whatever, but it's a $60 game that they just cut the multiplayer off of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strange.
And from what I understand, I think like they just want to keep that Halo Infinite thing. Like that'll just be the de facto program. And then you just make like incremental releases under that for like multiplayer, whatever the next game is and stuff like that. That's what it sounds
this
like.
This is the way. Yeah.
Yeah. So whatever.
Whatever.
And honestly, like I don't mind that as like a model. That's fine. I think there's just places where like if every game is designed to support that, you lose out on so many really cool one-off experiences.
Yeah.
Like there needs to be still a sustainable way to do those kinds of games. And then fine, go ramp it with your living service game, whatever buzzword stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks cool and I'm hearing good stories about it and the stuff you're saying. I mean, grappling hook, my ears immediately perk up. they do. Like I had no idea that that was even like a played out thing, which shows how, you know, how in touch I am, but
Yeah. Who said it's played out?
I think it was you, Dennis, who said like, oh yeah, you know, just because every game has to have one of those for something like
it's,
that.
It's legally required because it's awesome.
Okay, true. Yeah. I can get it. Yeah, no, I can agree with that.
Yeah, hey, point me to a bad grappling hook. You can't.
There are a couple, like the one in Harley's Humongous Adventure isn't very good.
Okay.
I mean, the grapple beam in Super Metroid is pretty underwhelming, actually, because it only like locks particular thing.
Things. Yeah, the grappling hook in Smash Brothers when it leaves Samus like exposed if he misses, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. The grappling hooks in the Tomba games, like you get it and then immediately they make the platforming just really, really like a lot more frustrating around it.
But
like
the Tomba there's no games real otherwise good.
No, they're charming, which gets a lot of people to give it extended a lot of benefit of the doubt. You know, like it has a unique premise and like a very distinct visual identity. The actual platforming and even just like the quest and side quest design is incredibly tedious.
Okay, we're honing in this grappling hook Venn diagram. And there are no bad grappling hooks in good games. Consensus?
The grappling hook makes or breaks a game is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Ooh, now we're getting into cause and effect. Like which side of the correlation is causation or is it?
Oh man. Yeah. So Halo Infinite, was that all you had? I mean, in addition to
and those other two staples that I always play. Yeah.
Nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I talked about playing Wild Rift in past weeks and how that's, you know, it's a fun game on mobile, but it's an investment of time, even though it is shortened up from traditional League of Legends. So I was like, you know what I need on my phone? I need like a Slay the Spire-like game, just something that's solo and has a fair amount of depth and progression to it, but that I can, you know, hit the lock screen button and pay attention to something else at any point and not feel like I'm disappointing a team of people. So I started searching and reading a bunch of lists and looking up stuff. And then just bought Slay the Spire for my phone.
Oh, is that on the phone now?
It is. Yeah. It's been out for a while.
Okay.
And it is excellent. It plays exactly the same as the game would on PC. The text is tiny,
and
there's no cross progression. But apart from that, like I have yet to quote unquote misclick or mistap, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is that what you would call it? Because of the size of things. And so, you know, the interface works well. The one thing that I've found that is not replicated in the mobile version is that when you're choosing cards on the PC version, you can check a box to see what the cards are when they're upgraded.
Okay.
And for someone who doesn't have it all memorized in advance, that's very helpful to kind of think, like, is this one worth taking because it upgrades to something super powerful? Or is the upgrade really nothing to write home about? And does that factor in your decision-making on what to take because you know you are coming up on a fire to upgrade at or what have you. And I can't find any way to see the upgraded version of a card when making that selection on the mobile game.
Oh, wow. So you can't make like a long-term planning decision just based on the, that sucks.
I mean, I've put enough time into Slay the Spire, and Ben, I imagine it the same way where you can kind of either remember or guess what the upgrade is going to be.
Yeah. I was going to joke and say, it looks like you just have to remember the entire.
Yeah. which for the most part I do. And then there's some cards that just upgrade in a really weird and interesting way, that you wouldn't expect. And you know, remembering those when you can't see it is a little tough, but it hasn't jilted me yet. I just don't have the security blanket of being able to see it when I make my choices.
Yeah.
But apart from that, as far as I can tell, it's the full game. Which is interesting, like I said, no cross progression. It's interesting to go back to nothing unlocked, you know, not even other characters, and start from scratch. And I'm curious, Ben, have you ever gone back and played like vanilla Slay the Spire, or have you just kept on building on your past achievements?
I just have the one, because I imagine it'd be kind of frustrating because you get locked out of some of the strategies if at the beginning of the game because you don't have the cards unlocked.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I'm finding is there is that ramp of like, oh wait, is this card that I'm thinking might combo well with what I'm taking even unlocked for me right now? And that I can tell, there's no real clear delineation of what cards are in the base set, as it were, versus not. And then obviously there's a lot of relics that aren't unlocked yet. So the experience is definitely simpler. I haven't even unlocked the kind of true final boss of the game yet, because I have beat it with two of the main characters, but not the third so far. Mm. But it's also like, having spent a good deal of time away from the game, it's not horrible to have an on-ramp back into it.
Yeah.
Like I have found myself more grateful for the simplicity as I'm getting my footing again than I am frustrated that certain, you know, combos, relics, whatever, aren't in the pool yet. And I think that's because all told, especially if you're beating the game consistently, you unlock stuff pretty quickly. So I think you ramp back into it before too long. And then it's just all about kind of going up ascension levels. So I've actually appreciated the starting from scratch, because it's a little intimidating to go back to a game that complicated with that many cards when you haven't played in forever.
Are you playing with your family at all, or is this just solo dolo?
No, not yet. But I have continued to play Pocket Tanks, which I talked about last week.
Oh.
Local co-op on my phone. That's become the de facto, like, if we're killing time at a restaurant or what have you, Pocket Tanks comes out.
Nice.
I've noticed something really interesting on that note, not to tangent away from Slay the Spire too fast, but I figure we've talked Slay the Spire a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed something interesting, that my kids do much better playing competitive versus each other than they do co-op with each other.
Oh, there's like less arguing.
Relationally. Yeah. It's like, you know, if this is competitive, I know where we stand, and I don't have to worry about, you know, someone else pulling me down or me pulling down someone else, that isn't supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas a co-op game, they'll play Minecraft Dungeons together or any one of a number of things.
Yeah.
They will just be furious because one wants to go one direction, one wants to go the other. They're both stubborn, and so they keep on walking until like the game forces them back together and all that. So it's really funny that the more directly in conflict they are, the better they get along.
That makes sense, actually. Like, I remember back in the day, like, even just on the, you know, playing Sega, like Mortal Kombat, it like started way fewer fights. Got just the bitter fights over like playing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, Hyperstone Heist. Sure. Like, just like, you're supposed to get the guys on the left and I'm supposed to get the guys on the right. You know, anything that goes bad, you can blame on the other. And that lines up. Yeah.
Yeah. But they've also reached the point of turning a competitive game into a co-op game, which was fun. So Super Smash Bros. Ultimate has a stage, I believe it is Solid Snake's stage, where you're kind of in a prison compound, and then, you know, mechs come in and kind of break it apart while you're playing. And they realized early on that if you punch the walls on either side, you can break them down and open up like side arena stuff. And so they're fighting, and then they're like, oh, right, this is that stage. All right, you go get that wall, I'll go get that wall. And then they spent the rest of the fight just breaking down the walls.
just setting up your own little goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so who knew Smash is a sandbox game?
that's good. Yeah, just all the fun of playing with the box.
But yeah, so Slay the Spire is the quote-unquote new one. Playing it on phone is definitely a different experience. And otherwise, it's just been my old standbys.
Nice.
Where?
Nice.
Coincidentally, I actually watched somebody play Slay the Spire on like Xbox over the weekend as well. And I was surprised by like the control scheme that extended so well, where it's like, yeah, I guess you could do everything on a controller. You know, like, I'm just so used to it being like mouse and keyboard and it being so fluid with that. So
yeah,
that like Hearthstone, Slay the Spire, like that kind of mouse and keyboard, and really it's just mouse, translates so much easier to a phone screen than it does to a controller.
That's funny, because like I've done, when I have played Slay the Spire, I don't believe I have it on PC unless I got it in a bundle. I've done it on the Switch and not had a problem, aside from the text being very small.
Yeah. That'll get you regardless. Interesting. Well, it could also just be what you're raised with, effectively,
or just what your first your first kind of encounter is. You know, like I played
raised with within the context of the game. Yeah,
of course. Yeah, like the first time I played Monster Train was on the Xbox, just because it was better to, you know, sit in my living room and play that game mm-hmm. for long stretches. Right. So
I checked, Monster Train not on phones.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Which I don't know. Do you think, I haven't seen the UI aside from hearing you guys talk about it. Do you think it could be ported to phones?
I don't see why not.
And anything can be ported to phones.
No, it can't. Okay, the there we go. Right. Not. Anything could.
They ported Terra Mystica to
Mystica. Ah.
Nice. This is going to be
about you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, all that I have is just more of my, I've continued playing Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. And I have no, like very little additional to add. That is the Dragon Ball Z action RPG. That is just a retelling of the, you know, original Dragon Ball Z, just kind of anime manga kind mm-hmm. of deal. I don't know how many sagas they include in this, but for people who know, I did the Saiyan and I did the Frieza saga. Now I'm in the Android. And then after that, I believe all that I have left is Cell and then Boo. And then that is, that is going to be the end of it. And what's been great about it is, like I can trust that the combat itself is getting more engaging as you fight trickier enemies in the story who have different attacks and kind of different gimmicks to them and stuff. And mm-hmm. as I like explore any of the side systems that they bring in, I can be comfortable that this is probably going to be some bullshit. And also I'm really not going to need it again, because it's almost like I don't want to get the power-ups that they give by doing like all the side training and like searching for minerals for upgrades and stuff. Like I don't want that, because I want the actual story battles to stay hard, you know. So I want to be underpowered so I can like need to engage with the battles in a more canny way.
Yeah, there's like self-balancing that's going there.
yeah you know. And like story, you know, doing the main story stuff, is just a really fast retelling of this admittedly very simple and very stupid story, but with like fun characters and like crazy melodrama that happens. This person, you know, died, but we can bring them back to life, and all of this, you know, just kind of like rules lawyering about what the Dragon Balls can and can't do, you know. So like I'm still very much on this train, but it's like super tunnel vision. I am not being dragged off of the main path, because anytime I have ever tried to do that, the game has rebuked me. Yeah.
Seems like interesting design.
I mean, I don't know who it's for, you know, because like maybe there are kids who are into this, who are like into Dragon Ball. Like it doesn't feel like it's a kid's game. It doesn't feel like, I guess
fans that would marinate in Dragon Ball all day if given the chance. So I'm sure there's someone that's just drinking in every second of it.
Yeah. But also like somebody who does that, like probably doesn't want to see the story. I don't know who this game is for, except for me in this case, which is like, I don't know. I could just like fast forward through the series, because I want to retreat into a little bit of nostalgia. Yeah. But
you're saying this game is half for you, specifically the critical path half.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. And, like I said, the actual combat and the main stuff is engaging enough to me.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that's all. That's all I've got.
What
have you had you any? Oh, go ahead.
Did you stream over the weekend?
No. I needed to take that time for myself to get ready for Duckstream stuff. I spent a lot of that time working on art for the event. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Dennis, you were going to ask a question.
Yeah. Have there been any levels or segments that called back episodes that you then wanted to go look up, like, oh yeah, this fight was super cool, I should watch that again?
No I don't feel the need to watch because I got the like I got the like broad strokes of it. Like
it was enough to be reminded of it.
Yes. And like, you know, when I was in fifth grade and it was just like it was exciting enough to come home because, you know, like very little today mirrors that. But it's like it aired every single day. It was, you know, 22 mm-hmm. minutes of content and like a lot of it was filler. So like going back to like a particular fight, it would be like one fight that was stretched out across like 3 days and you would come in and you know, like it's just a lot of a lot of big energy attacks and like screaming at each other. The game itself, like you get a sense of their gimmick and like their personality or whatever, but like what would have been stretched out over all of that, you know, just like wildly bloated kind of storytelling is condensed mm-hmm. into, you know, maybe a couple of fights with different, you know, like different characters going up against this enemy.
Yeah, I feel your pain on that side. I mentioned I'm watching Naruto with the kids.
Yeah.
We're 15 episodes in and there's already a clip show.
Oh, fun.
Like, there's already an episode that half it was like recapping the entire story to this point. Like, really?
Yeah. It's strange.
And then the second half of that episode was exactly what you were describing, just screaming at each other about how there's going to be a fight. So. And I'm starting to notice in the character, like I love Naruto's character designs. It was, you know, one of the things that was always fun as I was watching it the first time. And now I'm realizing how many characters have their mouths covered in one way or another. So you can save on animation.
Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah.
It sounds to me like Naruto is like a rap battle where there's just talk of there going to be a fight or squashing the other MC for the entire.
Oh man. Yeah. So, I don't know. I probably have. It's been nice to play this for like a half an hour before going to bed. You know, Who knows what I'll do after this. But yeah, that's all I got.
Cool.
Nice.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked them about games respecting your time. So what games are most respectful of your time and what games are least respectful of your time?
Yeah. Let's get started here with Greg, who says the most respectful modern or updated RPGs like Dragon's Quest 11 or Skyrim. Not only is the autosave system very good, saving each time you enter a building or a new area, but you can manually save anytime you want outside of combat. Compared to old school RPGs, this allows you to play it in short burst. Least MMORPGs like World of Warcraft and Final Fantasy XIV. Yes, some tutorial quests and missions are fine to get the hang of things, but don't send me on a dozen of those when I could get all of that stuff in one quest.
Very fair.
Yeah, no, the whole starting town kind of thing. Although, I don't know. If you go back and play early MMOs, you're like, oh my gosh, this is way too harsh. They're
hold my
like,
hand a little, please.
Please don't just like kick me out at the front gates of Freeport in EverQuest and like send me to be devoured by fire beetles, please. Mm. They were really counting on you. Well, I mean, it was originally designed as like a pay by the minute or pay by the hour kind of thing. So they were counting on you failing over and over. So it was more expensive, but eventually it was like, really counting on you learning from other players. They repackaged it saying, oh, it's a benefit because you're going to be, you're going to be relying on people. It's social, right?
Community.
Yeah. Ben, what does Eli say?
Eli says, Ghost of Tsushima made an incredibly smart decision to not include an animation for picking up all the little doodads you find on your adventure, and you don't even need to hop off your horse to do so. Compare this with Red Dead Redemption or Far Cry's skinning animations or HZD.
Horizon Zero Dawn's
requirement that you must be on foot to grab a bundle of sticks. That is a good observation that I did not even think of having played both those games.
Well, and they knew better too, because in Horizon Zero Dawn, it is an upgrade you can purchase to be able to grab resources from your mount.
BS.
Shame.
There's another upgrade to increase your inventory size. Like, mm-hmm. they knew.
Don't punish me with tedium, dear God. Mm-hmm. God, that is wild. Let's see. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says, not being specific, any game that doesn't let you skip a cutscene, and specifically when it's a cutscene during or before a boss fight. Mm. If you're going to die a lot or even just a couple times, it's always very annoying. On the other side, any game that lets you skip a cutscene and also autosave a lot so you don't have to replay and waste your precious time on reloading what you just did, is that's amazing. Latest game that I played is Kena Bridge of Spirits, and sometimes bosses or monster encounters can be tough, but if you die, you just come back a moment right before the fight. Amazing. Also, skippable cutscenes.
Yeah. No.
I agree. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
This calls to mind the first Splinter Cell game. Mm. Before the final boss, there was probably a 5-minute cutscene that was unskippable. Oh, man. And I watched that cutscene a lot.
Well, Splinter Cell's a really hard game. Like,
yes.
The original ones, especially. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. No, like any of those, specifically checkpoint cutscening and stuff. Cutscene mm-hmm. checkpointing, rather. Yeah. Let's see. Zach says, even though I enjoyed playing it, I would say Destiny 2 with the seasonal sunsetting of weapons. It doesn't feel worth it to grind out anything that isn't cutting edge content because it may go away soon. Then there is the issue that when they reworked armor, all the old armor had such lower stats than the random crap that you could get in 5 minutes. Yeah. If there is a constantly progressing like stat treadmill. Having all of your efforts be just completely wiped out by the passing of time. It's a little bit too much like real life. Yeah.
True indeed. Well, and like for your hyper engaged players that are spending every waking hour on Destiny 2, I get it. That keeps things interesting and makes you feel like your time is well spent. Mm-hmm. So like for a very small niche, it is respectful of their time,
yeah,
at the expense of everyone else.
Yeah. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, the most is Dark Souls and similar games. You practice, you get better, your skill increases as much as stats do. Least is any game where grinding just increases stats and not skills. A lot of old school JRPGs spring to mind. You grind so the spell attack does more damage, but casting it is still the exact same.
Yeah. And then, you know, it does more damage, but then the second that you surpass this hurdle, it is again immediately rolled back because of the stair step progression curve. Yeah.
Yeah. We always say upgrades should give you new verbs, not just higher numbers.
Please. Please. and Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, most respectful of my time, Ender Lilies, a game that's 90% Metroidvania and 10% Souls-like, has a few features that should be a requirement for these games. Fast travel between all the plentiful save rooms, the ability to return to your last save room at any time, and no loss of anything upon death. That is a big departure from Souls-like. dying, that's my comment, dying just warps you back to the last save room you passed. These changes make it feel like you're always progressing because you're never backtracking unless you want to. Least respectful is Death Stranding. The game's main mechanic is time disrespect. And everything you unlock just lowers the time disrespect level. But it somehow still works, and I don't know why. That's hilarious. An excellent description of Death Stranding.
Yeah. God, I want to play that. I inexplicably, just because I have so much other stuff to play, but like, Death Stranding has kind of been in my mind. I kind of want to like dip back into that a little bit. I'm not going to, because that would be insane. But like, I don't know, that game has stuck with me longer than I expected it to.
Yeah, it's
something truly original, right? Like nothing was quite like it.
It just takes the first thing that you would program in a game and say, stop here, but let's go deeper.
Oh, the combat in it was fun too. I liked the boss encounters and stuff. Yeah. So for me, I mean, like a lot of like the least respectful stuff, I think has been covered, and like things that we hammer on in Watch Out for Fireballs, bad checkpointing, you know, animation friction, things like that, unskippable cutscenes. It's really bad to go back to an earlier generation where cutscenes were either unskippable or unpausable. Both of those are really equally bad to a certain degree, you know. But as far as like good, I'm gonna again play with the box on this one a little bit. Instead of saying like a specific game, I'm going to just like name a system or like a whole kind of system, but like sure. A portable system that you can just put to sleep, you know, without having to do the whole like start up and, you know, run down kind of deal. Like, you know, before I hopped on here, it was I was playing Dragon Ball Z, right? I was playing on my Switch and I saw, oh, it's, you know, 8:23. We record at 8:30. I need to pour myself some water and I need to, you know, sit down and make sure my story is posted and all that. And all that I had to do was press one button. And when I'm done and when I get the cats played with to tire them down, I'm going to lay back down on my bed and I'm going to press the button. It's going to be right back there. It literally just fits in with whatever my life is. This has been like, this was the huge thing, like with the DS where you could just close it and it would go to sleep. This is a huge thing with the PS Vita as well. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the main reasons why, if given the choice to play a game either on like a full console or a PC or on the Switch, like I will take a suboptimal experience, you know, either graphically or, you know, even to a certain extent, interface wise, I will take that hit in order to have the ability to pop in and pop out as needs to happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I mean, with consoles, even that came about with the PS3 and Xbox 360 generation, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I'd be very curious to see where in the rise of smartphones as a thing that fit in as well, because yeah. I feel like that is when it became the expectation of anyone interacting with a machine that I can just kind of pause this in any state and go do something else.
That is the main bullet point feature of the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S, I believe, is the instant resume that you can do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, just like at a system level, building that in, reducing the friction to start up start up and stop. Is incredibly necessary because, again, I need to be able to fit the game into my life, and that is the easiest way to do it.
I'll allow that creative answer.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
All right. So most I'm going to say any John Blow game, since he is the first person I heard of like mentioning this as a priority in like game design, is like respecting the player's time and like that being a bullet point of the games that he's made.
No repetition. Yep.
Yeah, and then the least, I think the easy answer is saying like an MMO type game or whatever that requires like a lot of hours to grind and stuff like that. But I think even beyond that, the answer I want to specifically say is games like Rust, where it's not only do you need to invest a lot of time, but they make it in real time. So they're saying, no, this is more important than whatever you're doing in your actual life.
Like, yeah. No matter where you're at, somebody could be ruining all of your works.
Yeah. And the fact that like you can hook up cell phone alarms to that too, so that it can like be like, no, I'm going to page you. I'm going to page you in real life and say, hey, you need to be here.
Yeah.
I think that's like a special circle of game hell. Oh, is, I mean, like where that belongs.
That's way
like,
too
similar. Get a pet.
That's way too similar to your actual job.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, disrespectful. I would say it's a growing trend of games that are cross play but not cross progression.
Okay.
And I find that really, really frustrating. The last one that really stuck out my mind was Knockout City, which I was really high on for a while, but I wanted to play it on PS4 I think I wanted it up on the big screen instead of just my monitor. And I couldn't get that. I had to buy the game again. And even though I could play with people on the PS4, I didn't have any unlocks. I didn't, you know, I wasn't allowed into the work that I'd put in on PC. And it was that way for Apex Legends. It's that way for a bunch of games. So I would love to see that sorted out, that like, look, there's ways to know it's me playing this. Can we just have it on different devices and let me make progress where I want to?
Please.
We broke down that barrier for playing with other people. So let's, you know, break it down for progressing your character in whatever form.
Yeah.
And then let's see, respectful. It's kind of funny. My mind goes to all of the hint systems in games that are just kind of in line with as you play. Mm-hmm. So the, like Uncharted, especially the later Uncharted games, it felt like they were very quick and maybe in some instances too quick to sense that like you're wandering around aimlessly. I will highlight something or give you a gentle nudge in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, they're trying to anticipate any time you feel lost, and make sure you have momentum in the right direction.
Yeah.
Which especially like I think of Lost Legacy, which was much more open world than the other Uncharted games. Like that's tough to do, and they also did it well.
Mm-hmm.
So I can appreciate that.
Yeah, it's cool that they integrate that with the gameplay too, and just like have an NPC like tell you like the hint. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, and I think that was a good question. Thought-provoking. Thank you for posting that, Dennis, and thank you everybody for responding. If you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss. This is where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. Sorry about that. I got distracted because David put in here for the multiplayer. The game which least respects your time is the Stanley Parable for existing. So we had to get that dig in. I figured it would. Yeah. I do not.
He's not on the show. He's dropping hammers on Stanley Parable.
Yeah, I have no idea from whence the hate comes.
It's like the Portrait of Dorian Gray. He just picked a game to pin it on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like he can enjoy every other game now.
Just the whipping boy, the whipping game. Dennis, what are those ex-BioWare people doing?
Yeah, we had the Game Awards since we recorded last, which means there is a glut of new announcements. And Inflection Games, which, like you said, is ex-BioWare people, came out with a trailer for a game called Nightingale. And this is a new IP that is Gaslamp Fantasy, mm-hmm. which I love that. I'm disappointed there's not a punk in there somewhere, but okay. Gaslamp Punk just doesn't roll off the tongue with those P's right next to each other.
Gas Punk is something I have heard, although that sounds gas pump, yeah. different. Yeah.
It's a gaslighting me about gas punk here. But yeah, so Victorian Gaslamp Fantasy is the style, which basically means that it's all old timey weapons and old timey fancy outfits. And that style just is fun to look at, especially as I was looking at the enemy design in what has been revealed so far of the game. It's really cool. And it's all creatures that are at the same time familiar, and then some stuff that just doesn't really have analogs or has an interesting twist on it. So my favorite from early in the trailer is there are these like weird dragony looking kind of things that have human faces, but then they like roar at you and you realize the human face was just like a decoy, anglerfish like, you know, light to lure you in, and the actual like mouth is under the face, which is just like it's super cool, and I don't know where that came from, but I haven't seen a reference for it.
The basilisks in Dark Souls are like that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they've got their actual eyes are under the eye sacs, right?
Yeah, yeah. They've got like a tiny little face under the gigantic eye kind of things. Yeah.
It's that kind of doled out to that plus dragon is what I was looking at in the trailer. Yeah. You know, the fawn character that talks to you has like really cool gold plated stuff all over them. There's just straight up giants on a scale that I haven't really seen games do. Like even Giants in Valheim, as I'm thinking of them, weren't that much bigger in comparison to what Nightingale was seeing. Mm-hmm. So it's very like fey themed, which is a world that I think is, I mean, I'm biased because of Deck of Wonders, but that's a very ripe world to explore. And so it's really cool to kind of see that brought to life through this game. It seems to be kind of a crafting survival game. So I mentioned Valheim, and that was what came to mind again and again. Maybe like Valheim plus a little bit of Monster Hunter. And you know, it's unclear from the reveal trailer what is, you know, core to the gameplay and what's showing off stuff that's more ancillary to it. So, but there's definitely like city building and crafting to it. And there's definitely some element of going and hunting these powerful mythical creatures. Mm-hmm. But all of it looks really, really cool.
Nice.
So coming sometime in 2022 with alpha and beta, etc. Keep an eye out for Nightingale.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't heard of this. This looks sweet.
I'm just so happy to see a new IP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're just a new studio. They're going to give you that.
Yeah, true. Yeah. New studio, old people, which is sometimes a good combination, sometimes not. But yeah, we'll see.
I think all of our stories have something to do with the with the game awards. Sure. Just the announcements that were made there. Ben, I'll leave it up to you. Which of those you would like to do?
I was actually going to just do both and be greedy this week.
That's fine. Okay. It's a short end.
The Game Awards one that I was going to talk about is they also the Star Wars Eclipse, which is a game that's going to be made by Quantic Dream, which I've realized for me is like the Chick-fil-A of game studios, where
they're awful. Yeah,
it's a tough moral dilemma where it's like, man, I really like all of their games except Beyond Two Souls, mm-hmm. and but I don't want to support them as a company. So how can I rectify this?
Right.
But that said, so I think solution in the past is make a donation to offset the purchase of the game.
I mean, that's as good as anything.
I think that's how I live with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't want to delve into that moral quandary. The game itself looks really sweet. It basically just shits off graphics. It doesn't really show much gameplay or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But a game that looks that good with like choices like in a Quantic Dream type game seems like it could be really, really cool. So I am excited for that. And yeah,
nice.
Have you guys seen this trailer?
Yeah, I got very strong vibes. And Quantic Dream is the perfect studio for this. Star Wars has a long history of over-explaining the minutia of their plots. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest holes that fans are angry about in the movies is this, like, somehow Palpatine returned in the sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm predicting, while I don't think it'll be the story specifically of Palpatine figuring it out, because it's too early in the timeline for that, I think this is going to center on some kind of like resurrection or where that whole process comes from. This game is going to be a giant apology for that plot hole.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, that's where they're headed in Mandalorian 2, if I recall correctly.
Is that right? Patching the movies.
Yeah.
Bummer.
God.
Yeah. They should just stay away from those as far as they can. Ugh. Yeah, I the one thing that I was like had faith in is like one of the things I really liked about Detroit Becomes Human is they did a really good job of knowing like what details to insert like in a mission or the story. Like they just did just enough to make it like you feel really immersed in this fictional world. Mm-hmm. So if they do the same respect to like the Star Wars universe, I think that could be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fingers crossed they do it justice. We'll see.
Yeah. And then I'll get my game award one out of the way here. I did not expect them to do this, but I probably should have seen it when they released the HD remaster of the first game. But there's going to be an Alan Wake 2. So Remedy announced that with a 60-second trailer at the Game Awards. And I am cautiously optimistic. You know, Alan Wake didn't really hold up that well on revisit when we went back to it for Watch Out for Fireballs. You know, I think that there's some problems with the narration and also problems with the combat being a little bit repetitive. But what I've played of Control gives me hope that they have worked out the latter one. And I think maybe, you know, that every studio deserves a second chance. You know,
so you're hoping Alan Wake flies around in this game?
Well, I mean, it couldn't hurt. And also, like, Alan Wake leaves off on this huge cliffhanger, like, even in the DLCs, you know, I'm curious to see where that goes, especially with what the Control DLCs brought in from the Alan Wake, kind of making it part of like a broader, like, multiverse cosmology kind of deal. I'm curious, to say the least. It's coming in 2023. No, it's coming in 2023, so we have a long time to wait. What were you going to say, Dubs?
Oh, yeah. Especially in these years are particularly long.
Yes.
I was going to ask, they've kind of made the official declaration that this is no longer an action game. This is survival horror proper.
Yes. Yeah.
And what do you take from that?
Sounds good to me. Like, if it means that there's going to be, you know, resource privation, and if they're going to lean more on just real cool spooks, I am happy with that. That sounds good to me.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I guess I got to get around to playing the first game so I can appreciate the second.
They put out that the HD remaster, so it's easier to play now than ever. It was, I mean, the original one for a while there was very touch and go because they were pulling the it off of storefronts specifically because of music licensing problems.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Oh man, I'm excited to see what music drops they do if they continue making it episodic.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll have learned their lesson and are more conscientious on the business side about how they structure that, so that's not good.
I mean,
in a couple of years,
and so like two out of the five episode ends the first game were just their little in-house band, the Poets of the Fall or whatever. But like, I mean, ending the main game with Space Oddity or having Poe's haunted at the end of episode two or in dreams, you know, like those are cool moments. That's a pretty big drive. That's a pretty big kind of thing. I would be sad if they decided to be more gun shy about using licensed music in the interest of business. Yeah.
Well, here's hoping.
And Ben, you had you posted Polygon's best 50 games list.
Yeah, I thought this would be a good one to go over as well. Are we going to do an episode next week or not?
I mean, I had it in mind to do it because I don't want to do an episode during the week between, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, we can hit this here because we'll probably have different people on next time too. Okay.
Yeah. So Polygon posted their top 50 games of the year. And so it was interesting to kind of browse through that and see how they had them ranked. I guess notably the number one that they had was Inscription.
That makes sense.
Which I think that's a respectable pick, or at least you can make a good argument for it. So I was kind of curious to know like what you guys thought was your game of the year, if you thought there's any snubs from the list. I'll just say mine is Dyson Sphere Project, didn't even make it on the list, so I was like a little bit upset about that. But that said, it came out in January of 2021, so they might have just forgot it that it came out.
Yeah, and that was early release or early access for a little while too, right?
That's true. Yeah, yeah. So it could have gone the way of like Subnautica, that similar thing where that came out of early
in
January.
Yeah,
the year it came out. So
Hold on a second. When did Snake RX come out? When was that?
that was this year.
Yeah, no, that was a pandemic project.
I thought the only reason you could be not mentioning that is because it didn't come out this year.
Yeah.
No, it came out this year. that was not a snub in my mind. I love the game, but
yeah,
I don't.
The airtime we gave it. Good God, I think that has to be my game of the year.
My favorite game of the year, Grime, got snubbed. That wasn't mentioned, which I think is crazy. I think it literally just must not have like landed on their it must not have like passed through their editorial, which is strange to me. It is neat to see that Unpacking is on there, though. I think Unpacking is like genuinely an incredibly good and touching game, and I would recommend everybody who is able to play it.
Yeah, I mean, it's their number one Inscription is more or less an indie game, and their number two Chicory is as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got a couple, you know, big names.
Yeah,
so filling it out, but
yeah, I think something else to talk about is this compared to the Game Awards, where I think It Takes Two won Game of the Year, and it's like,
strange. That feels I mean, I don't know. I can't see an argument for that. Especially given what it was up against, other than just like we're real close with Joseph Ferris, you know, like as an organization.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
They're really in the spirit of the awards, then, that it's all political and who you know.
Yep.
Yeah. Like
that did not take long.
very, very funny. I mean, It Takes Two as a fine game, but like the story is fucking poison.
Dog water. Yeah.
And it does sag kind of in the like let's say third quarter, let's say.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, another one. Well, I guess where does this fall on released this year? Splitgate came out.
Oh yeah.
In the form that I know it this year.
Right.
And that might overshadow Snake RX.
Yeah. it's always funny doing this because there was that Twitter kind of thing going where people were posting like a list of, it was like a decade. So it's funny, they say a decade of games of the year, but it went from 2011 to 2021, and it's like, that's 11 years, guys. but I participated in it. First I did my usual thing whenever one of those comes up, was just say the Burger King game Big Bumpin' for the Xbox 360 was my game of the year for every year. But then I actually did mine, and I looked at it, and it's like, I didn't play any of these games that I'm listing as my game of the year in the year that they came out, you know. So it's always weird kind of like thinking about this, because I'm looking at a bunch of games on this list that I have intentions to play, and who knows, some of those might outrank Grime for me, but right now I've got to say Grime.
I don't remember you talking about Grime either. I'm looking this up now.
We did it on Bonfireside Chat. Like I made some allusions to it, and I specifically recommended it to David. Because he was looking for some Souls-esque kind of stuff. So I didn't cross the streams too much, because we talked about it for four whole episodes over on that show. Gotcha. But yeah, no, it's it is a very good game that also happens to be, you know, pretty difficult, but have a very unique aesthetic and a great story to it, actually. Like it kind of hits all the cylinders.
I'd mix it up with Mortal Shell in my mind.
Yes, yeah, another Souls-like, but this one is Metroidvania. It's weird because Mortal Shell has you turning into a statue, whereas in this you are a statue. This is the one where you're a rock guy with a black hole for head.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking through the top 50 from Polygon anyway, and I've played three games on the list.
Yeah.
So that's percent wise what, under 10%,
yeah,
that I got to. I'm not gonna feel too bad about that. It's over 5%.
Yeah. did anybody else have one that they wanted to call this is my game of the year right now? Ben, for you it was Dyson Sphere, right?
I think it goes to that just because I have so few qualms with it, and I put a lot of time in it, and even though maybe some people might not like the busy work of it, I do think it is one of the cooler factory games I've ever played.
Mm-hmm.
But I also get how that you can't make that like game of the year on like Video Game Awards or something like that. Like how many people, like what percentage of the population enjoys that game? So
I mean, a lot. More than you might think. You know, just do a straw poll of people who like played and enjoyed Factorio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think after consideration, I'm going to land on Snake RX.
Yeah.
Okay. I think per what I said earlier in our multiplayer discussion, like that is a game that is just a little concept done in a bare bones way that is still really creative and fun and sticks in your head. And like that's exactly what I want out of games right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't need to try to be roped into a battle pass or a commoditization of my time to advertisers or whatever. Just give me a cool idea, well executed, and let it be.
I can't wait for the sequel, like SNKRX Legends. Oh, no. Get the battle pass.
I mean, from the outside, I've not really, I played a little bit of SNKRX, but I didn't get it. So, you know, I just kind of left that for you guys. But like from the, like, I mean, the modesty of SNKRX kind of seems to be a major part of the appeal, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So if they get bloated with it and make it overblown, I think that would take away a lot of what people kind of came to it for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would love it's. It almost has a Binding of Isaac feel to it in terms of like, oh, what if I have this this unit and this unit together,
mm-hmm.
and having interactions like that's the way I would add complexity is just in more interesting interactions between units.
Yeah.
A la Binding of Isaac.
Nice. Cool. Let's see here. I think that is this segment. I also think this might be an episode. How do you all feel about bundling it up?
Speed button.
The credit. Thank you for listening to this level number 397. Believe we're gonna be back next week. Please understand if we aren't, you know, it's just one of those things, it's that time of year. Regardless, you can go to twitch.tv/duckfeedtv or go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream to get information about Duckstream happening this weekend as you hear this. It'll be a good time on Saturday. I believe it is at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Is that what we settled on?
I believe think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be doing a tabletop campaign DM'd by Adam Bucherry of the Enter the Survival Horror fame, a great DM. He did a Jala's birthday stream with us a little while back. We're doing a custom game and it's going to be a good time. So come hang out. That'll be for a couple of hours. And then for the rest of the weekend, like I said at the beginning, 48 hours of streaming to benefit the Transactive Gender Project.
Confirmed at 3.
Okay, confirmed at 3. Cool. Am I forgetting anything? You know the usual stuff. Right now, the most important thing is Duckstream.
Mm-hmm. No, I think we ended that.
Cool. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me on Duckstream at Duckfeed or at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me in the hood. I feel like I got to represent for David here.
Okay.
David, who's bobbing and weaving right now, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And Jala Chan is in places.
She is. And stick around for some titles. I didn't write any down.
Ooh.
I have 4.
Okay.
Ooh.
I've got Bent My Sus.
Okay.
I wrote down To Catch a Munchkin, which I think that was early on. It was talking about, Ben with his cards trying to min-max his XP.
Mm, okay.
Getting called out for it. No bad grappling hooks in good games.
Okay.
And then from the multiplayer, I believe Rookie's answer, time disrespect level.
Okay. And Ben.
I just have one, and it's you gotta learn about Alan Rickman sometime.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Yeah, no, there we go. Because you do. Oh man, cool.
Excellent.
All right, well, I'm sure we'll be in contact before Saturday, but have a good rest of the week, everybody. Ben, yeah. Safe travels.
Yeah,
all right.